Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Terrence Burns.
And I'm Dave Johnson. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by our members. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in Depth.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
Catherine Dunn is one of Portland's literary giants. Her highly praised and widely read novel, Geek Love, was a finalist for the 1989 National Book Award and was named one of the Atlantic's great American novels. Catherine was an inspiration and mentor to many writers here in the Pacific Northwest and beyond. She died in 2016, but her legacy continues, including here at KBOO, where she hosted the show Gremlin Time under the alias of Red Rider. On today's In Depth, we celebrate the publication of Catherine's new book, Near Flesh, which collects 19 of her stories, most previously unpublished, and comes out tomorrow, October 7th. To help us celebrate, we're honored to have two of the people instrumental in bringing these stories to us, Catherine's son, Eli D'Apollonia, and Jim Redden, a local journalist who has contributed to Willamette Week, the Portland Tribune, and Oregon Arts Watch. Eli, as mentioned in the intro, your mom had a show on KBOO, Gremlin Time, where she read classic and lesser-known stories, including my personal favorite, Jack London's To Build a Fire. The producer, Matthew Clark, added music and special effects, so it was really radio theater. Were you ever there in the studio with her?
Yes, I think I remember coming in a couple of times when she was recording. I don't remember specifically being there for Jack London's To Build a Fire, but I do remember her reading the story. I remember listening to it and really enjoying it.
Well, welcome back.
Thank you. It's been a few years.
It's clear from Gremlin Time that she loves short fiction. Most people know her from her novels, but she wrote a bunch of stories, though only a few of those were ever published. Were they rejected or just never submitted?
No, she was really focused on trying to get novels published, and she'd always talked about, ever since I was fairly young, she'd always talked about wanting to put together a short story anthology, and she just kind of never really got around to it. She was working on other things, but it was always there. It was always in the back of her mind. It was always something that she'd wanted to do, so I'm glad we were able to finally make that happen.
Now, Jim, you wrote a wonderful article on the new story collection in Catherine's time at KBOO in the July Oregon Arts Watch. You point out there's even a character in Geek Love with a show on a Portland radio station not unlike KBOO.
That is correct, and I'm sure she was inspired by her time at KBOO, including that in Geek Love. More than that, Matt Clark, the producer, had the nickname Fortunato,
right,
which was another character in Geek Love. So there are references to Kebu there. People may not be aware that she was here at Kebu because she did always appear under the name Red Rider. And she said she was, in an essay she wrote, she was, people were frequently surprised when they met her and realized she was Red Rider because she had such a low speaking voice, many readers thought she was a man.
You mentioned in your article that when one listener actually met her, he had fallen in love with Red Rider on the radio.
She had fallen.
She had fallen in love and was very disappointed.
Very confused, yes.
Now, in the Arts Watch article, you write about the origin of Near Flesh. This book and the novel Toad, which came out in 2022, owe a lot to a New York book editor, Naomi Huffman.
Correct. She took a real interest in Catherine. She'd been a longtime fan and realized that there was not much else published of Catherine's. And she went online and discovered the archives that are maintained at Lewis and Clark and discovered that there were stories there and contacted Eli to see if he was at all interested in getting any of that published. And he was. And it was a good collaboration, and she was able to do, you know, this collection that comes out tomorrow, the 7th, and previously did the previously unpublished novel Toad.
And Toad, I read, Eli, you actually, it wasn't in the archives. You had a copy that you sent to Naomi, but these stories were.
Well, there was a copy in the archives that was not really legible. And so Jim and D.K. Holm and Bill Redden worked together to make a legible copy that we could send to Naomi. And so that was really the origin of that. It was not in great shape as it was found, but after it was transcribed, it was ready to read and ready for Naomi to look at, and she decided that she liked it and wanted to publish it. And that was really exciting for all of us because Toad had been something that Mom wrote back in the 70s and was really, you know, she tried to send it to publishers a few times and had been rejected and was really hurt by that. And it caused her to kind of step away from fiction for a little while. So being able to come back and see it published was really exciting.
Now, you've called the new book, Near Flesh, an opportunity for readers to see stories they might never have had access to. Mm-hmm. It allows both her fans and newcomers to experience the wide variety of her writings. What would you say to readers picking up Near Flesh and expecting Geek Love? A lot of people are coming from Geek Love when they read Catherine.
Well, I think that there are certainly stories in there that are consistent with the same sort of level of maturity she had when she wrote Geek Love, or maybe even more so. But a lot of the stories in Near Flesh are stories that she wrote over her entire lifetime. So some of them are stories that she wrote when she was very young. And so it's a real opportunity for people who are interested in her writing to kind of see that evolution and see the changes in her style and see her experiment with different approaches and different styles of writing, because that's something she did throughout her life.
Now, Jim, I'm guessing you're a big Catherine Dunn fan.
Of course.
How were you introduced to her work? Was it through Geek Love, as so many of us were?
Well, I first met Catherine when the two of us were working at Willamette Week. And got to know her back then in the 1980s.
And she had a column there.
She had a column called The Slice, and she also wrote some stories there, and she would come into the staff meetings we would have every week where everybody would sit around a table and tell what they're working on and things like that. And she was just the most amazing person I'd ever met in my life. She was, you know, funny and, you know, great sense of humor. She was not politically correct. I had a full-time job there as reporter, and she was freelancer, But when she wanted to do a big piece on a professional wrestling scene here in Portland, I served as the editor of that. So I was able to work with her while she was writing something fairly large.
Now, unfortunately, we don't have time to go over individual stories in Near Flesh. There's 19 of them. But I'd like to mention one that should be of special interest to Kathryn Dunn fans. The title is Rhonda Discovers Art. Can you tell us a little about that one, why it would be so special to a Dunn reader?
That is a chapter from the book she was working on, Cut Man, that was never published. Never finished. And it was originally published in the Paris Review, but has always been available only behind a paywall. So this is the first time that many of her fans can see that for the first time beyond the paywall. But for those people that want a sense of how Cut Man was going to turn out and what it was going to be about, that's worth looking at. But Doug Perry at the Oregonian this morning let slip that there's a second unpublished chapter of Cut Man also as part of the book, and that is the one that follows, called Screaming Angel. So they're actually, I believe anyway, two chapters in Near Flesh.
Oh, that's kind of a bonus for Kathryn Dunn fans. Eli, is there any plans to finish the unfinished novel? I mean, that's been done in the past.
Well, unfortunately, Mom left express instructions that we were not to release the remainder of Cut Man or try to finish it. And so I'm trying to honor her wishes in that. There's more than 900 pages of material that no one has seen.
Wow.
And
well, that's difficult for you, isn't it?
She was in the process of kind of cutting it and putting things together and trying to figure out what she wanted to do. It was a very lengthy process. You know, it was something that she really wanted to be special. And so I understand the frustration of her fans out there that they don't have access to that. And certainly I feel some of that frustration myself. And at the same time, I want to honor her wishes and honor her legacy. And if she felt that it was not ready for public consumption, then I'm going to respect that.
Now, beyond the novel Cut Man, there's still a lot of your mom's work published in journals like Willamette Week and mm-hmm. quite a few boxing articles, which was a passion of hers. In fact, she boxed.
Absolutely.
And they haven't been collected in books. Are there any plans for a nonfiction anthology?
You know, Jim and I have certainly talked about that in sort of a cursory way. I think that's something that we may explore in the future.
Well, Eli and Jim, thanks so much for talking with us about Kathryn Dunn and her new story collection, Near Flesh, on sale tomorrow.
Thanks so much for the invitation.
Really appreciate it, Ken.
We've been talking with Eli D'Apollonia, Kathryn Dunn's son and executor of her estate, and Jim Redden, a local journalist who has contributed to Willamette Week, the Portland Tribune, and Oregon Arts Watch, about Kathryn's new story collection, Near Flesh, which comes out tomorrow, October 7th. There will be an in-person launch for the new book featuring Portland-based authors Omar Elakad and Jeff Vandermeer and Crystal Willer, archivist of Lewis and Clark's College's Kathryn Dunn Collection, also tomorrow, October 7th, 6:30 p.m. at Literary Arts, 716 Southeast Grand in Portland. And KBOO set up a special page collecting a few of Kathryn's gremlin-timed recordings. You can listen anytime on demand by going to kboo.org and searching for Kathryn Dunn Reads. This is Ken Jones for KBOO's News in Depth.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You are listening to KBOO News in Depth. I'm Althea Billings. Veterans in Portland rallied outside City Hall on Sunday at an event called Duty to Disobey: Veterans Stand Against War on American Soil. Portland City Councilor Mitch Green was in attendance. Here's what he told the crowd.
My name is Mitch Green. I'm a Portland City Councilor for District 4, and I'm a veteran. I want to thank Mike Preisner for helping pull this together on such short notice, and all my fellow vets for speaking out today. I've been an anti-war veteran activist for a long time. And one of the phrases that we keep close to our chest is this: the war always comes home. You see, this moment that we're in Portland cannot be separated from the broader historical context of the militarization that we are embedded in. For my entire adult life, I have witnessed the federal government pour trillions of dollars into a machine that is capable of waging war on a global scale, with the ability to deploy considerable resources of troops, arms, and their logistical requirements to faraway places in a matter of days. We maintain the ability to strike anywhere at any time, even when those targets are civilians, and even when the pilot sits 8,000 miles away in an air-conditioned building operating a drone. Instead of building housing, a modern energy grid, high-speed rail, universal healthcare, world-class free education, and so much more, we've built bombs, we've built guns, ships, fighter planes, and drones. So that way we can fight a war anywhere, at any time, and now that war has come home. Like so many Portlanders, I'm angry, I'm frustrated, and appalled at the willingness of this administration to turn the military against us, against American cities who refuse to submit to his overtly racist and dehumanizing program of mass deportation. It doesn't matter that we have done so peacefully and within the bounds of our constitutionally protected rights. The very exercise of those rights is an affront to this lunatic degenerate who occupies the White House and has elevated people like Stephen Miller and Pete Hegseth into positions of considerable power. Shame. This is a serious threat, and we must treat it with the urgency it deserves. Folks, the stakes are really high right now. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. Our democracy is on the line. As a city council, I have limited direct power to stop the U.S. military. Of course I do. And I can give you, every confidence that the city of Portland is using every legal tool we have to try to slow this down and stop it. But that's not ever going to be enough. It's going to take a mass mobilization. So the power that I have in my office is to use the privilege of my office and the special privilege as a veteran. Because when I put on the jacket that I wore overseas in Afghanistan and stand in front of you in front of a video and ask troops to disobey orders and ask veterans to muster, people listen, right?
That's right.
I'm not supposed to say things like that, but I did it. Because the stakes are high. Because our democracy is on the line. And we must act with urgency. So I want to talk a little bit about tactics and strategy, and I'm sorry I'm talking for a long time, but this is really important. It has never been more important to use your voice to speak out against the actions of this federal administration. And veterans, those of you behind me and those of you who may be watching along or in the crowd kind of, seeing what this is all about, you have a special voice. Society has granted us the benefit of doubt when it comes to respectability and honor. At least twice a year, we get thanked for our service, right? You get a free breakfast at, Denny's? Do they still do that? The unspoken agreement in that deal, though, is that we are supposed to remain silent when our service is used as a prop for the same militarization that injured our bodies and stained our souls, and that killed our brothers and sisters and countless civilians.
That's right.
That's right.
If you break that agreement on your own, you could be shunned, right? But if we use our veterans' voices to speak from a place of experience and solidarity and reject the ongoing militarization of not just our hometowns, but the grander project, then we are powerful. And we can lead an important part of what must be a mass mobilization against Trumpism and fascism more broadly. Yeah. Yeah. Vets, it's time we muster once again. This time it's not about taking up arms, but getting plugged directly into organizations that have an explicit anti-war aim and have an unwavering commitment to democracy at its core. Talk to your neighbors, talk to your friends, family members, and especially those who you know who may still be serving about how deeply wrong all this is. My organization is the Portland DSA. Your organization may be something else, but be it an organization. You cannot be alone right now.
Right.
To those still serving, you play a very important role in building an effective resistance against the rise of authoritarianism in America. When you signed your oath of enlistment, you swore to support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic. But the highest commitment in that oath is the commitment to support the Constitution, not necessarily to obey unconditionally the orders of the president or your chain of command, especially when you feel that you have a moral obligation to refuse. Okay? Make no mistakes, there are risks. I do not want to pretend that there are no risks. When you refuse an order, you are placing yourself, your reputation, your career, your military benefits at risk. But then I ask you to think about the historical stakes and whether or not you want to risk being part of a machine that commits war crimes and that is rendering asunder our Constitution. That's a choice you always get to make. Yes, you sign an oath, but you're not a robot. You're not an automaton. You're still a living, breathing person. And if you make that choice, you're not alone. Look at all these vets behind me. There are organizations that you can be in solidarity with that can say, brother, sister, I know how you feel. And you're not alone. And remember, our constitutional rights are under attack. So there are risks for me to use my privilege in this way too. You know, when you use your veterans privilege to speak truth to power and anti-war stuff, people get really upset sometimes, especially if you're an elected official. But I can't put out a general call to service members to make a decision to refuse an order and be quiet about it myself and to not expose myself to risk. So I don't care if it's one term. I don't give a shit about that. Say no to this deployment in Portland. Say no to shipping munitions to Gaza. Say no. And I want to speak to the broader question of tactics and strategy. It's my personal assessment that sustaining an occupied space at the ICE facility has limited strategic value and presents a tactical risk to our movement. Unfortunately, I think we're at the beginning of something, not the end of something. And we gotta be in it for the long haul, folks. And if you place yourselves against an overwhelming force to get the shit kicked out of you every single day, you get broken down and it's hard to come back. And I'm never gonna browbeat someone for making a choice on how they employ the diversity of tactics, because we need a diversity of tactics. But a diversity of tactics doesn't mean just do one thing every day. It also means join an organization, take a day off, talk to your friends and family, and think about how you can stay plugged into the struggle for as long as it takes, right? Not just one summer. So I just want to wrap and hand the mic off. I'll just close by saying that Portland will not bend to Trumpism. They win when we shrink back and allow this escalation to go unchallenged. We are powerful together. And to my veterans in tow today, thank you once again for your service.
My name is Mike Preisner. I was a non-commissioned officer in the active duty U.S. Army, and I served 12 months in the invasion of Iraq. I would like to start by saying that when I packed my 3-year-old son and newborn baby daughter into our car to begin the 3-day drive to Portland, Oregon, you know, going to start a whole new life somewhere, I did it because I fell in love with this place. I fell in love with the people, the born and bred Oregonians. I fell in love with the other transplants, you know, who also, you know, wanted to find the magic of Portland and followed it. And I fell in love with the immigrant communities here, the people who came from all over the world to start a life here. Yeah. I came here because I knew this is where I wanted my children to grow up. And Portlanders know that Trump's characterization of this city as a hellscape, as lawless, as a war zone, are lies. But they are lies with a purpose. His depiction of Portland is a fantasy that lives in the minds of a minority of the right wing in this country. People who have never been here, people who spend a lot of time online, too much time online probably. They are fed a sensational depiction of Portland for an industry of rage bait and content farming, exploited by mass media, by a disingenuous ecosystem of influencers, and by this administration itself. The reason Trump is relying so much on throwing this red meat to this minority base, this small sector of the population, saying he's gonna send soldiers to the war zone of Portland, is because he knows his administration has failed to address the conditions of working class people in this country. He knows he's losing support because of that. He also knows that he is embroiled in perhaps the most explosive political scandal in American history, his close association with the most notorious pedophile and child sex trafficker in the world, and his cabinet's clear efforts to cover it up. They have been desperate to do whatever they can to suck up media attention so that stays out of the headlines. All Trump has is a constant stream of spectacles of distraction. Portland has become just the latest city to pay the price for that, and the Oregon National Guard are just the latest soldiers to be used as props in that effort. That's right. Now, it would be bad enough if this deployment was simply a media distraction, but it is so much more. This past week in Chicago, ICE agents dressed up as special operations soldiers rappelled from Black Hawk helicopters into a Black and Latino neighborhood. They pointed assault rifles at the faces of American citizens. They detained, without cause, American citizens. They detained children, and according to witnesses, zip-tied them together as they were let out of their building. They proceeded to raid the entire building, kicking down the doors of residents with no warrant, no probable cause, pulling people out of their beds with no clothes on, zip-tying them and throwing them into vans for hours. Witnesses said there was Black people in one van and immigrants in another van. And immigrants who were detained, who most of whom were doing everything they were told they do to become citizens of this country and following all of the rules. What has happened to them? They have been sent with no due process through a brutal system to torture prisons in places like Florida and El Salvador. Those military forces shot flashbangs at everyone, terrorizing this neighborhood. It was a military invasion of an American city. All of those agents hid their faces, but they do not hide what they are doing. In fact, they celebrate, turning raids like these into the most depraved social media hype videos to be tweeted out directly by the White House. These are people motivated by hate, not making this country a better place. These operations, the one in Chicago, and so many more, are antithetical to any of the constitutional rights and protections we are taught our entire lives this system, and especially our military, exists to defend. This is the reality of the type of operation the Oregon National Guard is being mobilized to support. You soldiers who are mobilized for this are probably thinking, I won't be doing anything like that. That's what ICE is doing. It has been demonstrated all across the country by each of Trump's deployments of soldiers, both federal and guard. The role of these soldiers is to protect ICE as they carry out these operations, these disgusting and unconstitutional activities, being able to carry them out unimpeded, not inconvenienced by protesters in the community. In other cities, communities have come together to try to protect their neighbors. Your job as a guard soldier in Portland is to prevent that from happening here. Your job is to thwart the democratic and constitutional rights of our community to protest against ICE. Your job is to make people scared to oppose what is happening in our backyard, to instill fear, to be a barrier between the unconstitutional activities of ICE and the people. When Trump talks about using the military to fight the quote-unquote enemy within, this is who he is talking about. He is talking about everyone that he sees standing up here. He's talking about everyone in the crowd that came to hear us. That's right. He's talking about anyone in our community who wants to exercise their rights to oppose his agenda. And as a veteran of the Iraq War, and having had to spend 2 decades reflecting every day on that experience, I am compelled to tell young soldiers today that just because an order is considered lawful does not mean it is right. Everyone knows in their heart of hearts that this is not right. When something is not right, you have to take a stand. Constitutional lawyers have called this deployment an unlawful prototype of a police state, the first step in Trump's march to militarize American cities and subvert democracy. The only thing that can stop subversion of democracy in this way is opposition from the military itself. They know that. That is why they have fired everyone in the military command they think may oppose them. That's why they just summoned everyone to Quantico for a loyalty pledge. As Trump said, if you don't like what I'm saying, you're gonna lose your rank and lose your career. That's why they fired all the JAG officials, the Judge Advocate General officials, who may file legal challenges to the things that they are doing. What they have done is to make the burden of protecting democracy and constitutional rights fall on the rank and file soldiers, and to junior officers, to the enlisted. That is not a burden you have chosen as soldiers. That is not a burden that you deserve, but it is a burden that this administration has placed upon you. Your commander has told you, as we know in a leaked letter he put out to all the 200 Guard soldiers deploying here, that even if you disagree with this, and most likely you do disagree with this, that you must set a professional example, because this is about something bigger than you. We are here to say that we completely agree with that statement. That something that is bigger than you can be Trump and his racist, fascist agenda, an attack on our immigrant brothers and sisters, an attack on democratic rights, or that something bigger than you can be standing on the right side of history. And there is no doubt this is a moment of great historical gravity. Soldiers have rights. You have rights to tell your command you believe your orders are illegal and not follow them. You have rights to walk away. You have rights even when you're AWOL. You have a community of supporters and legal experts who will stand with you if you exercise those rights.
Right.
Even if you're not ready to take that step, when you are out of uniform, you are a private citizen. You have the right to speak against this. You have the right to join us in the protest movement against it. You are welcome here. The people you see behind you, the veterans that are here, these are the people that will be opposing ICE and opposing the National Guard deployment, and we want you to join us here. Veterans say, troops off our streets. Veterans say,
troops off our streets.
Veterans say,
troops off our streets.
Veterans say,
troops off our streets.
That was an excerpt of some of the speeches given at the Duty to Disobey Veterans Stand Against War on American Soil event that happened outside Portland City Hall on Sunday. This has been KBOO News In Depth. I'm Althea Billings. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. Support for KBOO comes from our members and from the Urban League of Portland, celebrating its 80th anniversary as a local civil rights organization. Urban League PDX provides housing, education, healthcare, and career services to local communities. Membership information.